You're listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Earlier this morning, I got off the phone with somebody. She called me and was wanting to work on saving her relationship, which is a typical reason that people call me. But she asked me this question, and many times I caution people to not ask why. The questions of why rarely help us much, but she had a kind of a different slant. She said, "Why does this hurt so much?" She told me that this has been one of the most painful things in her life, realizing that her husband was ready to walk out the door. They'd had the discussion that many people have, where he started out with saying, "You know, I'm just not happy." And as they began that discussion, "I'm just not happy" turned to, "I don't think I love you. I care for you, but I don't think I love you." And as they continued that discussion that devolved more into an argument, he said, "I don't think I can stay here." As they continued that discussion, he said, "You know what? I'm going to spend the night at a hotel." That process that started with him saying, "I'm not happy," led to him finding another place to live and beginning to move out. And what she told me was that she didn't know why it was so painful. She'd lost weight in the time since then. She had been not sleeping at all, not able to find a way to rest, and she was crying all the time. Little things would catch her. She would walk through the house and see a picture of the family and burst into tears. Or she would be talking with somebody who would just say, "Hey, how are you doing?" And she would launch into telling them exactly how she was doing, knowing that they were only being polite. She had a lot of physical symptoms. Her stomach was hurting her. Her back was hurting her. Her neck was hurting. She was having migraines. She was having a difficult time. And her question was, "Why does this hurt so much?" And she said, "I don't know, understand this, because you know what? We have been disconnected for a while. We're one of those couples that you talk about when you say the pause button marriage." She told me that she had hit the pause button when they had kids, thinking that she and her husband would eventually get back to something that they really wanted, not realizing that in the meantime, the marriage and the connection were suffering over and over. And so she said, "You know, it's funny. We were completely disconnected. We would watch TV in separate rooms. We were no longer sleeping in the same bed." She said, "Now, we did decide not to sleep in separate beds because, you know, we said that we kept each other up with our snoring. But in reality, I think it was more about us being disconnected." She said, "You know, we've gone on vacations together, but both of us recognized that we were enjoying vacations separately. And both of them had begun to develop their own separate routines." So she said, "I don't understand it. Here we are completely disconnected. He wasn't saying anything that wasn't already true and hadn't already been true for years. So why did it hurt so much?" Well, it's an interesting question because many people tell me that this is one of the most, if not the most painful episodes in their lives. People told me that it's been worse than losing a parent or worse than having a difficult illness, but there's something about losing this person that you thought was on your side that was particularly distressing. So the question is why that happens. Well, marital stress and marital struggle is one of the most painful hurts in life. It's more painful than other relationship hurts. Sometimes you lose a friend and you can say, "Well, you know, we kind of moved on from each other." Sometimes you watch as your kids grow up and stop needing you so much, and you recognize that's just a developmental piece. But you probably have always counted on the fact that that other person, that spouse, was there for you. And so part of the pain of this is a recognition of A, where things are not, and B, where you thought things were. This is despite there being a lack of connection for most people. Very rarely do people tell me how deeply connected they were and were so surprised when their spouse said, "I'm not happy." Usually both of them can look back and see that they were in a pattern of disconnection that had long been a part of their relationship. So here are some reasons why it's particularly painful. The first one is that we as humans are literally wired into our brain for connection. We are desperate for that connection. If you remember back to psychology class, maybe in college, or maybe you just saw it, there's this famous experiment where the researchers took baby monkeys, separated them from their real mother, and created wire dummies. On one wire dummy, they would cover it with terry cloth and warm blankets so that it was a wire dummy. It wasn't a real person, but it was warm. The other, they would put a bottle of food, but it would be a cold metal frame, and they watched to see which one the baby went to. The baby was constantly going for the warmth, even when the baby was starving itself, because the baby was so desperate for that connection. Think about how humans begin. We're born into a world where we're completely dependent upon somebody else, and that somebody else, our parents, hold us close, and we have that body-to-body connection. And that body-to-body connection actually creates a hormonal response in both the baby and the parents. And as we grow up, we're constantly in connection. Think about the kids holding their hands with the parents as they go along, and over time, who's holding hands begins to change. The kids go from parents to friends and from friends to love interests. And all along the way, we're trying to weave that connection into our lives because it's so wired into us. Now, unlike humans, unlike animals, humans have multiple levels of connection. The animals that we see around us kind of communicate through grunts and sounds, but most of the connection there is physical proximity. But humans have a couple of other ways of connecting. We have physical connection, whether it's hugging or kissing or holding hands or having sex. There are lots of ways that we humans have that bodily connection that triggers a hormonal response. But there is also a response when we have conversations with someone of depth. I want you to think back of a time maybe you and your spouse were beginning to date and you had that conversation, because I remember it in my life. It's that conversation that lasted for hours and hours, and you walked away and you couldn't imagine how quickly time flew and how much you were alike and how connected you felt. Your body was getting a hormonal response from that. You're getting a dopamine load in your brain to that. That's that feel-good dopamine that hits our brain that makes us feel so good. And so that came from a conversation. You may not have even held hands or touched during that time, but you had this conversation that kind of made you think deeply about this person. As part of that conversation, you may have even shared your dreams, your hopes, your aspirations, these deeper places that we can connect with somebody. And so we as humans have these multiple levels of connection that we crave. We crave the physical connection. We crave the emotional connection of feeling like somebody's on our side, that somebody understands us and that we understand them. And then we have that spiritual connection where we can talk about our beliefs and our aspirations and our hopes for life. And those ways of connecting cement us to this other person. And then as humans, we have this unique thing where we pledge to be together. I don't think that animals, even animals that mate for life, I don't think that they consciously say, hey, I'm in it for life. It's just kind of instinctual. But for humans, there's a choice. We make that choice. We have a wedding. We make a promise, whether it's a big wedding or a small wedding, whether it's before, you know, a minister or justice of the peace, we're pledging to be with this other person through thick and thin, no matter what happens. Keeping everything else at a safe distance. We're in it together. We make that promise, and then something psychologically happens. And in that psychology, we find ourselves bonded to this other person. So when there is a problem in the relationship, it's as if a part of ourselves is being torn away, being pulled away. And because of that, we're desperate for that connection, but we're also in the midst of feeling bad about it. You know, my person who was talking to me on the phone told me how much she was blaming herself for having let things get that far. She said, you know, I knew something wasn't right a couple of years ago, and I didn't do anything about it. I really knew something was wrong when we stopped referring to each other as spouses and started referring to each other as parents. And now I look back and I see all of these times when I could have said, hey, let's reconnect. Let's go do something, and I didn't. And so when there's a crisis, we tend to get into a cycle of self-blame. Another piece of this pain puzzle is that it pops a bubble. We have this belief that we have this safety bubble around us, and that it's popped either because somebody says, you know, I don't have those feelings anymore, or because somebody moves outside of the marriage and has an extramarital relationship of some sort, whether it's emotional or physical, and suddenly our bubble is popped. Now, it's been an illusion for all along. It's been an illusion, at least the way we've understood it, because we hold that bubble even as things are devolving in the relationship. But we have the bubble that we think is there. And so suddenly when that bubble goes away, we're left wondering what is real and what's okay, what's safe. There is another piece, and that is that the human wiring means that when we have a relational issue, we actually experience it as physical pain. But people experience it different places. Some people tell me their whole body hurts. Some people tell me their head hurts, their neck hurts, their back hurts, their stomach hurts, their heart hurts, but they feel a physical pain of that. And so not only do you have the emotional disturbance, but you have physical manifestations of that disconnection. That's how desperate we are for that connection. There's another reason that it hurts so much, and that's because many times it represents a loss in identity. Maybe we've always seen ourselves as that partner. You know, we're talking about a marriage that might have lasted for years, even decades. And in that time, you have cemented an identity as the spouse, as the husband, as the wife. And suddenly, those are put up for grabs. You don't know who you are anymore, and you don't know how to refer to yourself anymore. And that's even before you get to the place of deciding whether it's a divorce or not. After a divorce, it even gets to be a loss of identity. Who am I in the community? Who am I in my organizations? Who am I with my friends? And who am I in the family? Who is the other family to me? Who are my in-laws now? And it begins to be a place where we struggle with identity, and humans aren't very good at not understanding identity. Not having a clear identity for ourselves tends to get us into feelings of frustration and fear. More than that, there's often a threat to security. Now, let me be clear that often this is a feeling of threat, because often that perception is much bigger than the reality. But when there's a beginning of a crisis, the immediate questions are about, how am I going to continue living the way I've lived? How am I going to stay in this house? How am I going to continue to afford life? How am I going to have the same amount of time with the kids? What's going to happen with my retirement? And we go down the list of all of those pieces of the puzzle of life. And it can feel threatened by us that we're not sure what to do in the midst of all that. So when that happens, we begin to struggle with the perceptions of those threats. Now, most of the people find that over time, they work it out. Those threats, we figure out how to manage. It's kind of the fact of life that when there are struggles in life, we overcome. That's human nature. But the threat of that can put us on a big question mark of what's going to happen. So those are the reasons, and that's the reason, that's what I told this person. I said, you know, for what it matters, there are some legitimate reasons why this hurts so much. That desperation for connection, the fact that we tend to blame ourselves and that we've lost our identity and our bubble that we've surrounded ourselves, the human wiring part where it really does hurt to have lost that, the loss to our sense of security, all of those pieces play into the fact that in that one relationship, there's a huge feeling of threat. Here's where we get into trouble there, where we switch from why to what. What do you do? Because now I've explained why it hurts so much, it doesn't change the fact that it hurts. Many people respond to hurt by avoiding. If you've ever kind of hurt yourself on something, you tend to avoid going back to get hurt again. You know, if you find that you got your hand burnt on a stovetop, you're not likely to go back and touch that stovetop again. At least you're more careful about it. If you find yourself in pain from something, you tend to avoid that. And the problem is, there's only one way to get back to this relationship, and that's to live through the pain. So many times people tell me that they can't get started because it hurts so much. And my response is, the hurt doesn't change and will be there whether you work on it or not. The difference is whether the relationship will work on it or not, whether the relationship will survive or not. This is where I suggest that people begin digging in to understanding how to get back. For instance, I suggest that people rely on the commitment that they've built. Commitment is the North Star of a relationship. People think it's about happiness or love, but it's really about commitment, because commitment is always there. I can always choose to be committed to something. I can't guarantee I'm always going to be happy. I can't guarantee I'm always going to feel connection with somebody. I can't guarantee I'm going to feel passion, but I can guarantee that I can honor commitment. And so when you're in that difficult place, you can always rely for yourself. You can't demand it of a spouse, but you can rely for yourself on that place of commitment. More than that, you can decide that there's something meaningful about working on the relationship. There's something meaningful about digging yourself through the pain and finding your way back from that place. The meaning of this, of taking on something, of taking on what I consider to be very courageous work. Lots of people will tell you, give up, walk away, move away from the pain. It's too hard. But you may discover that there's something more meaningful there. I always suggest that people start their plan with figuring out the whys of why they want to save their relationship. That gives them the meaning, not the scary places of, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my money or my house or my kids or whatever. But why would you want to do that? Maybe you decided that you want to honor commitment because that's a big thing. Or maybe you decide that you want to break the cycle of divorce in your family. Or maybe you want to show your kids what it's like to actually work on something and work it through. To be countercultural, to be beyond just walking away. We live in a disposable world. What does it mean when you decide not to dispose, but you keep moving forward? So rely on meaning. Also suggests that you rely on a plan. Build a plan on how you can move through the pain, of how you can begin to work to rebuild the connection, how you can work to begin to work on changing yourself to be a better person, and to create what I refer to as the we. Being a we is how you stabilize any marriage. We are in this together. We're a team. We're on each other's side. And then find support. Find people who will rally around you to help you in the process of saving your marriage. Don't listen to all the people who say, give up, walk away. Decide that there are people around you who will support you. A lot of the people who will say, give up and walk away, just don't want to see you in pain. The problem is that doesn't stop the pain. It doesn't simply go away because you walk away. The pain can persist unless you find some ways through the process. And at least at the end of that, if you've given it your best shot, at least you can say, you know what? I did all I could. I did everything I know how. If you're ready to do that, but you don't know how to do that, I'm going to give you an offer. My Save the Marriage system is designed to help you understand what a healthy marriage is about. The right way to do a marriage so that it is a fair-proof and it's also a connected relationship. And we basically cover those pieces. How to work on your own sense of commitment, how to make this into a meaning piece, how to create a plan, how to find support. In fact, if you grab my system now, I'll give you a free week of my VIP program. And the VIP program is my program to help you get some coaching and support and some training on how to move that through that process. And if you go right now to SaveTheMarriage.com, you can also claim a free Get Ready and Get Going session with one of my coaches. All you have to do is go to SaveTheMarriage.com and grab the system. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.